This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
The toughest thing in the post-wrestling universe is nailing that double click for the intro, okay? That's the part I just want to get as smooth as possible. I don't have the trigger fingers of Wei Ting, but I try my best.
Who does? This man, you know?
It's felt. His absence is always felt.
Always. Sometimes, John, when you mention something, it feels like you haven't even finished your sentence before a graphic is on the screen.
Oh, he's so photograph. Quick. He's so quick. No one understands how easy my job is in comparison to his. I just sit here and blab on and make a few impressions, and that's it. I'm out.
I apologize to the broader audience that it's me and not him, but Wei is on collision course duty tomorrow, so it's taking a well-earned Friday.
That's right. Everyone joining us on YouTube here, you're being graced by the presence of Neil Flanagan as we go through SmackDown.
From Europe.
Yes. Do you like these earlier shows, Neil? Do these work a bit better for you?
In some ways, yes. And especially since SmackDown has reverted to 3 hours, because it gives me the option not to watch it live and therefore, you know, skip through the ad breaks and makes it just a briefer experience. And some of these very lengthy entrances and so on, I can just, you know, hit the plus 10 seconds button. You know, yeah,
there's a lot of, you can catch up in a relatively good pace, but it all depends. Watching these shows during the day is sometimes a big struggle for me. I finished this show about a half hour before we went live. It took me over the course of 6 hours to watch this show, but I did get to the end of it. So that was my day of catching a SmackDown from Berlin. So we'll see how the rest of the month goes, because we're going to be getting a bunch of these international TVs over the next month leading into the Rumble in Saudi Arabia. We mentioned it off the top for our patrons, but for those here on YouTube as well, already up on Thursday, I did the MMA, the annual MMA prediction show with Ariel Helwani that you can catch. That is a free show for everyone. If you are so daring, you can become a Post Wrestling Cafe member, where right now you get the live watch along that we did Thursday night with Brandon from New Jersey, watching the 1990 and 1995 Royal Rumble matches starring Dick Murdoch and Timothy Well of Well Done.
Amazing. I don't remember that 95 Rumble at all, and I know I will have seen
nobody, it. Nobody remembers anything about that Rumble except for the finish with Bulldog and Shawn. I guarantee.
Amazing.
You, there's nothing to remember.
I know that I will have watched that, if not live, then, you know, certainly within days. I can't quite remember how they were broadcasting at that time, but I was fully invested in WWF. Just amazing to me, the thinness of the roster at that point. Incredible.
It was hurting in January of 1995, but we went through those two Rumble matches, and then we've got Collision Course Saturday night with Wei and Kate, and Monday we're going live on the Post Wrestling Cafe for all subscribers, 11 a.m. Eastern time, for the annual Best and Worst of Show. Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and myself will be all in the same room. We will be in person together for our annual award show, handing out the awards for the very best and the dirt worst that 2025 had to offer us. So looking forward to that. Always one of the fun shows of the year for us to do, to officially put the nail in the coffin of the last year.
Yeah, the Four Horsemen in person in the same place, and it's always a highlight of the calendar, always a highlight of the early part of the year to get that show.
And why not, let's get in one more plug, because at the end of the month, the show everyone looks forward to, book club, is coming your way. And what are we reading this month?
Well,
I'm putting you on the spot here. Do you remember?
I do know. There's a certain wrestler who's sort of in the ether at the moment. His name, his song has been referenced a few times, and that is Chris Jericho. So we're going right back to the start. He's been pretty prolific with his books, but we're going back to the start with, I believe it's called A Lion's Tale, a Life in Spandex or something like that. And it's his first book, a very well-received book, and you and I will be dissecting every word of it, you know.
I don't know if when this book came out in 2007, when he was 17 years into his career, that we would say 19 years later, this guy will still be wrestling and the subject of much discussion as we are here in real time in 2026.
Absolutely, yeah. Incredible, you know, that people chanting his people chanting on Raw Y2J this very week. You know.
Well, I'm sure they will be continuing, but he did not show up in Berlin, Germany. That was the site of tonight's episode of SmackDown and quite the newsworthy edition of the show. The last number we got from WrestleTix was 10,674 tickets distributed with Joe Tessitore, Wade Barrett on commentary, and the scariest words I have heard on a wrestling broadcast in some time. Joe Tessitore warning that the last hour of SmackDown will be commercial free. I thought I was hallucinating. I was like, I can't be possibly hearing this, that they are going to do a commercial-free third hour of SmackDown. This feels like torture.
I had a slight chuckle to myself of just Schadenfreude, isn't that what they call it? That feeling of like John is going to see this, or if he hasn't already, and head will be in hands.
I almost wish they just didn't advertise this and instead they said it right off the bat. It's like... this was very sneaky. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I felt I might have a lawsuit on my hands after this.
Yeah, so class action, you and me, John.
That's it. Anyone who watched this, you have been duped. So Randy Orton starts off the show, comes out, and is immediately interrupted by Trick Williams, who came out, cut a great promo. I'm 6'5", 250 pounds, 8 abs, 3 chains, 3 cars, 2 feet. I don't know if that's quite the flex, but 2 feet to put his lemon pepper steppers in. And Randy, you do the math. It's not 2006 anymore. It's 2026. Great promo here from
it was
from
excellent.
Trick. Came out, felt like a star next to Orton. And Randy comes back and states the only number that matters is 14 because that's the number of titles I've won. You are a star. You're oozing confidence, but I question your brains by interrupting me. And Trick does put over Randy, says, you are one of the greats, and I'm seizing this opportunity. I respect you, but it's not the year of the Viper anymore. And the microphone gets knocked out of his hands, and Randy attacks Trick, hits him with a draping DDT, and as he calls for the RKO, in comes The Miz for revenge from last week, and tries to hit the skull-crushing finale, but he too is met with another RKO, and that takes out The Miz as well. And that was our involvement of Randy and Trick Williams.
Yeah, and it was, if I'm right, the sole time that we saw the decibel meter. I know when they go to Europe, they get these enormous reactions. So, you know, we saw the live and loud thing being back, albeit with a different graphic, reaching 105 decibels as Randy makes his way down the ramp. We didn't see it again. And I think that's kind of telling, you know, it's until more or less the main event. I thought this crowd was rather up and down. I don't know whether it wasn't
one of those crazy European crowds where it was just they just take over the show and it's like it was, you know, they had their hot moments, but I wouldn't say this was like some wild crowd that kind of defined the show or anything like that.
This was not a Bash in Berlin
crowd,
even if in the same city. And I don't really blame them because on TV you've got all these gaps, and again, a 3-hour SmackDown. The lengthy entrances, the commercial breaks, the returns, and the guys at the desk are talking about, hey, go to Vegas and you can go to see Hulkamania Lives Forever at the WWE World. And then obviously someone's been standing in the ring for 5 minutes. So, yeah.
There was probably a lot of waiting in the ring on these particular shows, or this one specifically, and throughout the night. But we then we transition from... The Miz and Randy Orton to, we go to the back first. Ray Phoenix arrives. He comes out for his match as Randy watches and it pats Ray Phoenix on the back.
Yeah. Tells him,
best friends.
Go get him, you know, kick his ass.
Right. So Trick Williams taking on Ray Phoenix. And, this was Ray's role here was to, make Trick look like $1 million or as best he can. There were chance for Phoenix throughout. Pop-up European by Trick. And then it's Phoenix with the springboard Frankensteiner off the top. And the He comes off the buckle, then a moonsault lands on Trick's feet. Trick manages the trick kick and a big uranage for a two count. There's an inverted tornado DDT by Phoenix that looked great. The adios amigo kick. And then he goes for a roll up. It's reversed by Trick, who yanks the tights for the pinfall in 11 minutes and 9 seconds. How did you think? Most importantly, how did Trick look in this match to you? Because he got, you know, a big spotlight here with Randy, and then putting him in a match that was, you know, they did let this one go 11 minutes.
They did. I think he looked okay. He looked a little janky in certain moments, but as you've already said, Ray Phoenix's job here was to make Trick look great, to bump around for him, and to take the pin, of course, which I think we all knew was going to happen from the bell. I think Trick still has a distance to go. He's definitely got the promo. He's definitely got the look. He's definitely got the charisma that manages to get through the screen, which is one of those intangibles. Mm-hmm. His wrestling has room to improve, but this was okay. Like, it didn't break down at any point. There were moments of clumsiness, but I don't think anything that you would say was awful or, you know.
Of what is going to be, I think, valued the most, it's more so the segment he had with Randy, where I thought, he came off excellent there.
Yeah.
And like his verbal skills are going to carry him significantly. And, you know, he has improved a lot in NXT, especially over this last year. But there is still that standard on the main roster, but not as, you know, life or death as it's going to be as compared to, like, if we were talking about AEW, where it's like, that's a very, very high standard. But
sure,
he's coming up, and there certainly, you can see, like, they have plans for him, and he's not just being positioned as someone on the roster. Saxton is with Julia and Kiana James, and Julia states the belt is back where it belongs, and she's going to make an example out of her opponent, Alexa Bliss, tonight, who she refers to as a legend mm-hmm. in the division.
Indeed.
A legend Bliss.
And the Julia, Kiana said Julia was an asset that will dominate the entire market. I think she's been listening to the president or chief operating officer? I think possibly both of TKO.
Squeezed right now, right?
That's, you know what? Kiana could pick worse blueprints to try and get something out of this character.
There is a definite character in there.
It's flailing, yes. You can go the Shapiro route, I think.
Oh, my favorite part of this entire segment was just Julia yelling in Japanese and giving it some oomph, you know, of some passion, because I still hate this pairing. I don't think it works.
Yeah, I mean, this title reign, they're almost positioning it as, like, this is take two on mm-hmm. Julia. Like, that's pretty much what they're telling you. They recap the ambulance match from last week. So Saxton catches up with Damian Priest. He's hurt. He lost some battles along the way, but he won the war with Aleister Black after 6 months. So he's calling his shot, too, for the world title. And that could lead me to Cody Rhodes. And with that, Drew McIntyre pops in, and Priest acknowledges, you too could be champion. But let's just remember that I scrambled your brains the last time we met. So maybe they will have a CTE match at the end of this. Drew then sticks around telling Saxton that Cody's emotions are high. And this is all a result of lighting that 8x10 on fire last week. And I couldn't believe this. So taking some of the criticism of how this photo had no emotional resonance, he pulls out the Rolex watch.
Yeah.
He just pocketed this from the bus. And it's so valuable that Cody has not noticed in a week that this watch was gone.
Yeah. So, where's my precious watch?
Yeah. So he's got the watch and said, this is the watch that Dusty had to pawn. And his plan is to get Cody to disqualify himself in the first fall. And then I just need to win one more fall.
Yeah.
His watch didn't come into any play beyond this, did this?
No. I mean, well, Drew had it during the ring announcement at the beginning of the match.
Okay.
He seemed to be playing. You know, he was sort of like brandishing it, playing with the watch, but I don't know what happened to it after the bell went.
This should have been the prop last week, but...
Oh, anyway. For sure. That's instead of that stock photo, kind of the 8x10.
Alexa's on the phone with an apparently sick, under-the-weather Charlotte Flair, who has stayed home, and Bliss explains that I didn't even learn about this title match I've got until today, and tells Charlotte to rest. So Nia and Lash walk in stating that trying to create waves, that the second you get a spotlight in a singles capacity, Charlotte is not here to have your back. And Bliss dismisses this and walks off.
Yeah.
So Charlotte is under the weather.
Fluids, rest, you know.
So we get our big title match here. I don't have much more to say about this. We go to Julia defending the United States Championship against Alexa Bliss, the legend. And Wade says, literally, Julia's looking for a more impactful title reign than her last one. So the bar has been set exceptionally low for her to clear it. Not and a whole lot.
Making any kind of impact with this title, I think, would be
an impact would be significant. So Alexa nearly catches her for Sister Abigail, but wouldn't you know it, Kiana James hops onto the apron and Alexa freezes. She's just got to drop everything for Kiana James, hits Julia with a DDT before going over to knock Kiana down, and then Lash Legend shows up, shoving Bliss off the top. Ref misses all of this, and she is hit with a Northern Lights bomb, and Julia knocks off the Legend in 7 minutes and 40 seconds to retain the title. And if Charlotte had been there, she could have aided in the numbers disadvantage. So
I guess
maybe we're creating some cracks here.
Could be. And we'll see next week. I'm sure they'll try to play into this absence of Charlotte. But as a match,
you didn't wish.
Not much to see here. You know, it's kind of the crowd got into it at the very end when with the, you know, the beat down afterwards, the Annihilator and Nia throwing.
We should mention the post-match Nia and Lash just took out Alexa Bliss with an Annihilator and just left her laying. So doing something with Nia and Lash with Charlotte and Alexa Bliss, and still trying to repopulate this women's tag division now with the new champions. And you know, you can create some challengers out of this as all the women are aiming for these tag belts now. Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst Of show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Jordan Grace signs with Nick Aldis, and this one made the broadcast.
So, not during the commercial.
To step up. Chelsea and Alba Fire walk in, and Chelsea wants a rematch with Julia and says that Jordan Grace doesn't matter. So Alba Fire gets into Grace's face, and Aldis, as oh, he's got 3 hours now that he's got a book, so you know he's got open segments, makes the match right on the fly between Jordan Grace and Alba Fire in about 30 minutes. Kit Wilson walks in, and he's got a busted up nose and a chipped tooth, he says, because Matt Cardona is the embodiment of toxic masculinity, and he gets the door shut on him by Nick Aldis, so Wilson calls him toxic. So, number one, I saw so many reaction videos on Instagram to people watching that entrance last week that I almost felt this had to be somewhat manipulated. But I think that this entrance really took off for this guy. And then today we learned that Elton Prince, who's been out since May, and I very clearly remember him getting hurt in this match with Fraxium, turns out for months he was dealing with he basically lost feeling. And they for months have been doing all these tests to try and figure out what was wrong. And they just discovered the source of it being his neck. And he had to have neck fusion surgery, which only happened yesterday. So he's got a long, long road to recovery. And very frustrating. You've had 7 months they had to diagnose the problem. And now the real recovery begins.
It kind of surprises me that, you know, I'm not alleging anything, but a seven month wait to get to the heart of this and get you know, the surgery that he needed seems really excessive. I'm just sort of surprised that this wasn't properly diagnosed in time. But yes, Elton Prince with a pretty lengthy social media post explaining all of this, how he lost feelings. And I think Wilson too, you know, supporting his friend with saying that he hopes Pretty Deadly will be back together at some point. But for now, he just wants his friend to heal up from this and be a dad and stuff. And we all hope that, of course. Elton Prince still in his 20s. So, I mean...
28, yeah.
Yeah, there's hope for him. But clearly they didn't see... it feels like with the booking of Kit and, you know, this toxic, anti-toxic masculinity character and his new theme and all of that, it seemed pretty clear that they knew Elton Prince was going to be out for a while, but the severity of this injury was not known to anybody, it feels like.
Yeah, I won't read the whole thing here, but this is just a portion of what he wrote, that he took a bad landing in the ring, the top of his head hit the mat, and what felt like burning hot electricity exploded through my neck and my arms. I lost control of my hands as all my fingers curled in and were stuck for a moment. It was pretty terrifying, and what followed has been 7 months of tests, questions, and pain. But thanks to the efforts of WWE's medical staff, and he lists some of the doctors here, we found the problem, and yesterday I successfully underwent a two-level neck fusion. Not exactly where I hope to be at 28, but we are owed nothing in this life, and I'm just grateful to be on the road to recovery. So, yeah, that's got to be, like, the physical part speaks for itself, but the mental load to take on as your career is basically on hold, and it's not like you're even starting the process post-surgery. Like, it's just all these months of trying to diagnose the problem, and then you finally have surgery. So, I mean, a really rough go of things. So, I mean, I hope it's as smooth a recovery as possible, like with the neck. Yeah. That is, you know, I'm sure you're antsy to return, but that's not something you want to rush, obviously. And, you know, you think of Will Ospreay too, like, yeah, this is not an injury to rush back from, no matter what the show is or what, you know, stage of your career you're in. Like, your neck is, that should be the priority. So
for sure.
Back to the show, and so that match is signed with Jordan Grace and Elba Fire for later. Saxton then speaks with Matt Cardona, who states, "It's almost been 6 years since I was let go. I could have been bitter. I could have lived off the Zack Ryder character, or bust my ass and come back, and I chose option three." And then, in his first interview back, he's like, "Byron, I see someone. I'm just going to take off." So mm-hmm. He spots Cody, and he walks up to Cody and says he's back for that title. And Cody's like, "Matt, please, come on." No, he wishes him luck and says, "Maybe after tonight, we can talk." And wouldn't that be prophetic right there? So
yeah,
Matt will have to make alternate plans. We got a video on the past three stages of hell matches from Austin Hunter to Hunter and Michaels. Hunter's been in a bunch of these. He was in one with Orton, Cena and Ryback. And then we go to a video detailing the past involving the Wyatt Six and the MFTs with a date of July 11th, 2025 that this began. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. This started in July.
Yeah.
July.
Crazy. I can't believe it, John. It feels insane, like a long dude. Time.
Between Damian Priest and Aleister Black to this, like, it's interesting, like, the programs that we are dedicating such time to. But
I think it's fascinating that for Saturday night main events and the PLEs, sometimes the booking feels a little bit rushed to get your top guys into and girls into like five matches. But meanwhile, in the TV programs, we're getting these 6 months long endless programs, and this is not the payoff, of course, because
no,
as we'll get to, you
know. We've got a stolen object at the heart of the matter here. Yes, folks, you know, everything you've been waiting for since July, 8-man tag, the MFTs against the Wyatt Six. So they have the advantage on Joe Gacy early on, and he does the upside down, taking out Tama. So in comes Eric Rowan for the hot tag, and the crowd is into Rowan as he's clotheslining everybody, and then we get the showdown. This is like Hogan Warrior in the 1990 Royal Rumble. It's Eric Rowan and Tala Tonga face to face, nose to nose, and they go to blows. And Tala choke slams Loomis. There's a double clothesline spot with Rowan, so both men go down, just like Hogan and Warrior. And then Howdy and Sikoa get tagged, the two leaders, and Sikoa goes for the Samoan spike. It gets ducked, and Howdy tries for the Sister Abigail. It's avoided. In comes Tama Tonga, and the mandible claw gets applied by Howdy to JC Mateo as Solo is on the floor and takes Uncle Howdy's lantern.
No.
Uh-oh. Uncle Howdy is... he is disturbed by this blatant stealing. And Tala then boots Uncle Howdy, and Tama Tonga hits him with the cutthroat and pins Uncle Howdy in 10 minutes and 19 seconds. Sikoa leaves with the MFTs with the lantern, proclaiming that the whole world is in his hands.
Yeah.
There's a great story about Wei Ting stealing a lantern at a WrestleMania press box, but this maybe takes a cake for the
stealing
of a lantern. Yes.
So I was searching my memory bank for old podcasts.
These were decorative lanterns that they had put in the media box that were actually to be used for lights. And Wei thought it was a Bray Wyatt prop that was to be taken, and thus he took this makeshift lantern home with him.
Quite right too, Wei. If you're listening, I would have done the same thing. Is it a spiritual beacon for Wei in the way that this is for the Wyatt Six? I wonder. As we were told from commentary, it's a spiritual beacon, and obviously they want this thing back.
How do you fight over a lantern? I don't even know how. I hope we get a deep narrative breakdown of this lantern and what it represents next week.
You did steal my lines about the 90s, the Rumble spots here. Totally, like lifted the...
They were on the watch.
The two big guys, yeah. Maybe they were watching last night. The match itself was pretty good. It was okay, you know. The storyline feels endless and not that engaging. And
Rowan really hustles when he's in there. I mean,
he does.
He gives it a lot. He's really good for the hot tag and coming in. It's like it's not a case of like. I think these are overall just characters that I'm really find very cold, but like they're all like to varying levels of like. Capabilities here. I mean, maybe Dexter Lumis, your mileage may vary, but yeah. You know, you have guys like Gacy, Tama Tonga, even JC Mateo. Like, you have fine talent in this. Sure. I just find this is this never-ending program, and I continue to look at the Wyatt Six as a really difficult act for WWE to figure out and present in such a way that goes beyond just the entrance that the crowd seems to be into, but it's when you have to, you know, engage in a real program and do the matches, and then we're, you know, stealing lanterns and stuff that I don't know how much how riveting it is for the audience beyond the
I feel like if you're in a seat in the stadium and the lights go, you know, you get the boo noise and the lights go out and all of that, I think that's a really cool entrance. I'm not at the point where I'm hitting the plus 10 second button if I'm watching this on a delay, because I just know there's like at least 1 minute or so of
that might be a future award. Who's your plus 10 second performer? Who's the person that just necessitates a speed up?
There's several of them, you know, but this entrance is one of them. And I agree. It's just not grabbing me creatively. I think they did a good job with building the Wyatt Six into an entity in the beginning, and some of those sort of found footage style.
It's like they all had some trauma that these characters were masks for. And I was like, okay, we've got something here. Because I think that the unlock for these characters is that these are real people, and that they are not literal, like, monsters. They are just like, this is their outward demeanor to the world at large because they've been affected by something. It's a tough ask in the best of circumstances, but you at least had an open mind at the beginning of this. The execution of it, it's been a lot tougher for me at least, and I don't think I'm alone in that.
You're not.
But we'll have another 6 months. I think we'll get to the 1 year mark of this feud. I feel pretty confident. Once I saw July, it's like that's not that far away. We're halfway there. Miz comes out of Nick Aldis's office, and Carmelo Hayes gives him the heads up. I'm doing an open challenge. And Miz just says, well, I just got RKO'd my neck. I can't do it tonight. So Hayes proposed, well, then I'll do another one next week. And we do in the background get a chant of Tiny Balls.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, yeah. It was faint, but it was there. So then Hayes runs into Ilya Dragunov. And Hayes says how he would be honored if Ilya accepted the open challenge tonight. This was great. We had back-to-back people that had no interest in this U.S. title tonight. Ilya says, when the time is right, we will run it back. But now I must speak with Nick Aldis about something else. What was that something else? He was going for a bigger belt. And that is his aspiration now. I don't know how well this painted the U.S. title as like the optimal prize for these performers. Miz is too bothered to face Hayes, and Ilya just flat out, as it's revealed later, is like, he's above this title now. He's interested in the world title.
Yeah, he may as well just say, you can keep that pissant title. I don't want him. I'm moving on.
I dropped it to move up. Okay, so...
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Another Obafemi video. And they do go over the end of NXT on Tuesday, his relinquishing of the belt. Did you catch any of this? Do you have any?
I did. I made it my business to kind of catch up with it. I didn't watch NXT live, but I heard what happened and thought, I've got to see this, you know, and see the sort of changing of the guard that you guys were talking about on Wednesday in the news portion about all of this. So yeah, I think NXT is going to be interesting in the time to come, you know, as all these call-ups appear.
Who are you most high on of the call-ups? Like, who do you see having like the best route to success among the several call-ups?
I think Oba. I think when he comes out, I think he's going to get really big reaction from it. Mm-hmm. And to see him in that state, and we've seen it before in a sense, you know, in the with Saturday night's main event. But I think that crowd reacted to him, and I think these big stadium crowds will, or arena crowds will react to him. And he has such a presence. He's a great character, I think, Obafemi. I think Jordan is a great call up. I think she's so good in the ring, and I think that she really made it. Probably made the, we'll get to it, but it probably made maybe the third best match of this show. Jordan Grace and Alba Fire later on, even though it was essentially a squash. I just thought she's very good talent.
Well, that takes us to Alba Fire and Jordan Grace, which is next. And yeah, they kept this one short. It was, you know, a showcase for Jordan Grace. She hit a spine buster and then a package sit-out powerbomb. Chelsea gets on the apron to distract. They've got to limit these just apron spots. I just feel like it's every match. Yeah. Someone gets on the apron and the person in the ring is just like, they're so transfixed with this person. So Grace just rams Elba into Chelsea and hits a torture rack bomb that Joe Tessitore identifies as beast mode. Jordan wins in 2 minutes and 36 seconds. And the more important part, like, quick match, they got over, like, this finisher is she's on her way to the back. Jade Cargill comes out confronting Jordan, saying this is her show and she's that bitch. So this feels like something they're going to be getting to sooner rather than later between Jade Cargill and Jordan Grace. So, you know, again, at least she's being called up and it feels like they have a direction for her, as opposed to, you know, back in, you know, another, you know, going back years where someone would get the call up and it was just like, why is this person here? Because there was very clearly no path or direction outlined for them. They're just here to fill up a spot. And that's not the case we have felt so far with some of these call ups.
And like Exhibit A is Carmelo Hayes, who we'll get to very shortly. But when he was this first round, we haven't had a draft in a very long time, but the last time they did was first round draft pick, blue chipper. I think he immediately got a non-title match with Cody, who he shook hands with and everything at the end. So he seemed set for huge things. And then the long term just absolutely wasn't there. He faded into obscurity and then he teamed with The Miz and all the rest of it. The thing I liked about this match was, as brief as it was what it really should have been. And I think it's what some of these Jade matches should have been. Too many people have been getting too much offense in with Jade. If you want to make her a heel who's super dominant, give her the full-on squash. And I think that Jordan looked really good with the dominant win. And to your point about the apron spot, it didn't really play into it. You know, she just launched Alba Fire into Chelsea Green and still torture rack into the powerbomb just for a very dominant win. And I just thought that was good. And the post-match was very good as well. You know, it's kind of put these two on a bit of a collision course, and with the three magic words, "I'm that bitch," you know, which is what John says to me when we're off air just before we start recording, just to make sure I know my place in the pecking order.
That's my go-to line. Saxton meets with Sami Zayn, who is asked to predict the main event. You have never seen a man so stressed about making a pick for a match. He says part of him wants to beat Drew for the title because I've never beaten him, but I'm rooting for Cody. He's one of the best champions we've ever had. So my money is on, and he has this long pause, Cody. And then I'm going to be waiting for the winner. And that was the whole role that Sami Zayn played on this show.
He was
Adam Cole here giving his prediction.
He was, but he gave it his all, like you said. Like he was a tortured soul.
Oh, he was really stressing me out here. Of like, dude, it's just a pick.
Yeah.
Maybe he has money on this. Maybe that's going to be his, maybe he's got his inside information. That's a new story to explore this year. Fraxium, if you remember them, this was so funny. They're in the back. They're getting ready to both try and answer the open challenge. And of course, it's like Nathan Frazier with the masked Axiom. And the supposed Axiom just drills Nathan Frazier, and it's Johnny Gargano under the mask. And he attacks Frazier. The real Axiom comes in, running them off. I mean, this was so goofy. Last week we noted like the absence of Tommaso Ciampa. It's since been noted that it looks like his deal's coming due and it might not be back here. So it just feels like Ciampa, they're not even writing him off. It's just like last week, it's like you don't have a partner anymore. And that's the end of a Jackass after all that.
Feels like it, yeah. I know the reporting out there is kind of conflicting about what might be happening with him. Maybe he just wants to hang his boots up after all this. I mean, I don't know. I mean, no one does, but interesting that he's just disappeared. This segment was so ridiculous.
He's like, could you imagine, like, this is your tag partner and it's just like, the mask is just, it could be anyone under this mask.
Hey, I have no
way to identify you beyond anything but your face. So the U.S. Open Challenge, the question is, who would be left? I mean, we've taken out Nathan Frazier. Miz isn't interested. Ilya's not interested. So Carmelo's just waiting, and out comes Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
What New Japan couldn't get is what Carmelo Hayes drew on this particular night. So this included Carmelo doing the 10 punches in the corner and doing the 6-7 gesture, which is something Neil does off camera sometimes when you're not paying attention. Nakamura kicks him in the chest and takes over, hit this very awkward dragon screw with Hayes laying on the top, and then worked over Carmelo's knee for most of this match. So Hayes is like basically working with one leg and gets put in the tree of woe. Hayes sits up, so Nakamura lands a sliding knee and goes right into the buckle, missing Carmelo. And it's Carmelo with a high cross to the floor, misses a frog splash, and Nakamura goes to the knee bar. He tries for a landslide and it's countered into a stunner. So then Nakamura tries it again, and this time he just hits a knee off the buckle, and then the Kinshasa is met with the first 48 and nothing but net as Carmelo retains in 18 minutes and 29 seconds, and Nakamura puts Hayes over. He raises his arm and shows his respect afterwards. A lot of time that this match got. No way is this getting this amount of time in the two-hour era.
Oh, no, not a chance, no. I mean, my first thought when I heard Nakamura's music was, oh, they're kind of serious about getting Melo over here as with this title, you know, because it's he's still a reasonably big name in the company. The live crowds always seem to like Nakamura. He's still solid.
The music got a big reaction.
It really did,
yeah.
And I feel also this was a very good match. I enjoyed it quite a lot. You know, we got some old school stuff here. You know, the half Boston Crab on the injured.
He should have put the Boston leg. Crab on as his little shout to.
Yes.
The most over submission in pro wrestling this week.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, the crowd certainly got into this after a period of being a little quiet. I think they weren't particularly into the Jordan Grace and Elbow Fire match. It, you know, she got the dominant win, as I mentioned, but it was to crickets, unfortunately. They were into this and with a very loud sort of 1-2-3 for the final three count.
Yeah. I mean, this title, they like the open challenge gimmick, it works really well, in particular when you have a wrestler that can pull it off. I don't think Carmelo is like Ilya to me set the bar really high, but yes. Carmelo's doing well in like this is his most substantive role since he has been called up, and you can just sense with him that I think he's gaining much more of a foothold now that he's got a role on the show, and it's making a big difference rather than just being another player on the roster that is just really didn't have much to do for a lot of the time other than like never-ending best of series that seem to be his calling card.
Yeah, and he is very good. I still think.
You know, he may
not be at the top, absolute top level, but I mean his selling throughout this I thought was excellent. For example, you know that story of the bad left leg was told well.
Saxton speaks with Cody before the three stages of hell and comes into his locker room and apologizes to Cody for interrupting your solitude.
Yes.
And Cody clarifies there is no solitude as champion and praises Saxton for the great work that he does. What are we doing here? He sees that Drew has his father's watch and he says that those that invoke my father, it's cheap and it's lazy to bring him up. My father doesn't make the comeback. I do. I didn't know what this meant. But
this was kind of weird to me.
Cody's the second week in a row where he's like going into like the like I'm speaking inside, but it's a pro wrestling promo type of Cody Rhodes promo, yeah. Which was not my favorite Cody, where it's like you're supposed to be the code man is speaking in such for you, the smart fan to unwrap what he really means.
But I felt, you know, this didn't fit the story very well. I mean, Cody lost his mind last week about this photograph thing. You know,
you would think like the watch is something that has ultra significance because this is, as we mentioned last week, this is a one of one item for him. This being destroyed is irreplaceable as opposed to our stock photo. And like this whole watch, like it played no factor in this at all other than Cody did not snap. He didn't care about this. He lost his mind over the photo. So what, he has meditated over this past week? He's a stronger individual. And what happened to the watch? Did Drew just keep it?
It seemed to disappear after the bell.
What happened?
I was trying to keep track of it. And I'm sure people will come into the comments at some point, maybe post us being live if they spotted it somewhere. But to my mind, Drew was sort of like playing with it as the title match was announced, but then I didn't spy it at all.
This just should have been the other way around. Like last week should have been the watch that he loses his mind over, and then this week it's the cheap heat of literally of burning the photo and Cody being not affected
because
you're not going to get to me like you did last week. Anyway, no one's going to remember this lead up to the match. Aldis makes an announcement that next week they will be in London and they are going to have four qualifying matches to set up a fatal four-way in Montreal for Saturday night's main event. The winner of the fatal four-way gets the title shot against either Cody or Drew at the Royal Rumble. So our matches will be Orton against The Miz, Matt Cardona against Trick, Damian Priest against Solo Sikoa, and Sami Zayn against Ilya Dragunov, which could be spectacular next week with Sami and Ilya. And, you know, I theorized with Montreal being Saturday night's main event, Saudi Arabia being the Rumble. Mm-hmm. You have to think Sami Zayn is the one coming out of this, I would think.
That was my sense of this immediately, like knowing where Saturday night's main event is and the Rumble. Well, he is a darling to both crowds there. you know, Orton, Miz, some of these are just sort of like, you know, Miz, come on. Cardona, Trick, I think, you know, they're going to continue to push Trick Williams. So I think some of them seem fairly predictable, but yeah, I think the end result of this has got to be Sammy. And
I think, honestly, with the outcome of this match, it's at least a more believable match that, you know, you can probably, you know, look at Zayn as a much more competent challenger than if it was Cody and Zayn and felt more like just your typical Rumble defense. But yeah, I would be very surprised if this was not Zayn, the way they've set this up. And it just makes all the sense in the world. Like that's a great title match for an event like the Rumble, and Sammy going for the belt in Saudi Arabia and winning the shot in Montreal. I think it kind of just writes itself, but they would be leaving a lot of heat on the floor, on the table in Montreal to beat him.
Of course they were.
There's always that. So then we get a video on Three Stages of Hell, which started in August in Montreal. We're ready for our return to Montreal. So Cody Rhodes, Drew McIntyre, Three Stages of Hell. And we start off with the straight wrestling contest. And what a straight wrestling contest we got here. Drew tries to convince him to use a chair, but Cody won't bite. So there's a Cody cutter for a two count, and then Drew rips off the turnbuckle pad. Referee Jason Ayers goes to tend to the buckle, and thus Drew hits a low blow and Claymore and pins him in like 3 minutes and change. So just race through the first fall. Drew's up 1-0, and we transfer to Falls Count Anywhere, which sees the introduction of a table and Cody powerbomb through it. Crowd loved this. They fight into the crowd. Cody has time for a selfie as he bites Drew on the head. And then they go backstage where a banana was sent into Drew's mouth. Drew is put on a table in front of a balcony out in front of the crowd. And Cody climbs the balcony and splashes him through this table. Cody came off this balcony. You have never seen a man get negative height on a splash. Like, he was belly flopping this dude. Yeah. It was like literally stand and put your weight forward. There was no jumping in this splash.
No.
But lean, put him through it, fall. Big pop that this got. And I think this crowd more so surprised that Cody was going to be going off a balcony on this show.
Sure.
They go back to ringside, and Drew's got a chair. He teases the Claymore into the desk, which was the dreaded strike in Montreal, our callback. And Cody avoids it, hits him with a crossroads on top of the desk, breaks the desk, and pins Drew on the floor, evening things at one apiece. And then they saved roughly 18 minutes for the steel cage match. And I thought this was the strongest of the three falls. They were, you know, at this point they were like maybe 13, 14 minutes dedicated to the first two falls. And, you know, they're working at a good pace. Cage matches can be tough because you're so confined, but I thought they worked like a hell of a, like 18 minutes or so here for the cage match. And it was just tons of near falls and doing all your big kickouts that this crowd was here for. There's a future shock. Cody starts bleeding from his head. He's like cut on the head. So that kind of added to it from a visual element. There's a crossroads out of nowhere that Drew kicks out of. He hits one crossroads, rolls through, hits a second one, and then goes for a third and gets gouged in the eyes by Drew, who runs him into the exposed buckle, hits a Claymore. Super Cody kicks out. They fight up the cage. Cody hits a super Cody cutter off of the side of the cage that Tessitore calls the greatest Cody cutter of all time. Then both get crotched on the top. The door is opened as Drew crawls toward the door when a hooded figure appears. And it is the returning Jacob Fatu, who attacks Drew McIntyre, who he believes was his attacker. And Cody intervenes, so Fatu decks Cody as well. And while he's attacking Cody, Drew sneaks out of the cage and wins the title in 31 minutes and 9 seconds. I think that your opinion of this will be, if you are one that believes the steel cage is supposed to be like the clean blow off finish and we get a run in, you may not have liked this. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought it was clever the way that they did this. I thought that it sets up, first of all, I like the idea of putting the belt on Drew. I think it caught people off guard, and that's not always the worst thing. And I think it adds some intrigue of whether this is going to be a long reign or whether this is going to be something short to get back to like whatever you think Cody's destination for Mania is going to be, if it's going to be a title match or not. And I think if we are in fact going with Sami Zayn, I think him going against Drew becomes a lot more of people that will have a belief that Sami Zayn could win the title at the Rumble, which is a good kind of dynamic to have. But
agreed. Yeah. I mean, an unexpected result. I certainly didn't see this coming. But by the end of it and having digested it, I completely agree. I think it's a good shakeup of things pre-Rumble and WrestleMania season to shift the belt off Cody. It makes Cody somewhat more interesting, I think, at this point. Drew with the title, I think, is a great character. Whether or not it's a long-term thing or a transition to a, you know, a big moment for Sammy at the Royal Rumble remains to be seen. Personally, I'd like to see it because I'm just a fan of Sami Zayn as a person and as a wrestler. I feel like, you know, that world title is something that he deserves. And as we've talked about before, John, although, you know, these titles are a prop, they're very important when people win them. And I know that, you know, when Kevin won his, I've got the WWE authorized Kevin Owens documentary somewhere, and it's post him winning the Universal title when he did. And you know, the wrestlers in the company, when they win the big one, as you know, it's very important to them because it feels like a stamp of approval from the top, I think, and you know, a validation.
Yeah, I mean, I might stand corrected a month from now if this is like, you know, the WrestleMania picture is a mess and how you look back on this. But coming out of this, what I like about the title picture on SmackDown is that last week and tonight, they introduced all these faces that are faces, figuratively, not baby faces, but everyone is aiming for this title. And you've got these eight people next week that are competing for it. You've got Cody and Drew in the mix. So it's like you've got all these potential pairings, and you're going into the Rumble as well, which you want to have as many viable contenders as possible. And, you know, Drew is a solid heel that I think it's fine to have, like, you know, he is the top heel on SmackDown, and to have the others chasing him, I think that can work fine. I think if you're going to do something like this time of the year, you can definitely get away with something like that and have Cody in, like, kind of in the challenger role going into your biggest period of the year as well.
Yeah, so. Drew's a very entertaining character, I think as a heel, and with him with the title, I think that just elevates all of that. And I thought it was kind of interesting, even from the intro at the beginning of the show where we see people arrive. Drew got a really big cheer. You know,
he was getting a lot of, like, when Cody was first shown backstage, like, he was getting noticeable boos. Like, this was, you know, it's a European country, and you can, like, it's followed Drew. Like, he's gotten, like, good reactions in Europe, and that, you know, it wasn't overwhelming, but they were definitely evident on the show.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure that that's all just because he's from the same continent as these people. I think that they're acknowledging that he's an entertaining character in all.
I remember last week's promo, or a few weeks ago, he's like, "I'm not fighting you in the U.S. I'm going to Europe to face you." So the man's endeared himself as well. So, yeah, I mean, it was a strong, I would say not like match of the year caliber, but I really enjoyed the cage portion. So, and you know, overall, like, it was an entertaining 31 minutes. You got like a surprising finish that I think the audience enjoyed. And more importantly, I think you're interested in the follow-up of where they go after this and setting up now the next, Saturday night's main event. And then that leads to the Rumble.
Yeah. I'm interested what Cody does next. I'm also interested in this return of Jacob, because I felt like there was somewhat more than him just getting Cody away. You know, he seemed to go after him.
Yeah, like, you, in theory, like, you should have one program with Cody before he even gets to Drew. Like, he kind of set up things with both, where it was, you know, he's coming back, and it's like he had issues with both these guys coming out of this match.
Sure, and it felt very much by design that Fatu did not look at all annoyed that he'd cost. You know, he didn't play the baby face to a T, where he's upset at himself for costing Cody the title. He just looked kind of impassive, and I'm sure that's what he was told to do, is kind of just don't sell, you know, this. So that puts him in this, you know, Is he a babyface? Is he a heel? What's going on with Jacob? Which is interesting enough.
So how were your feelings about 3 hours, including a commercial-free edition of or a commercial-free third hour of SmackDown? There was certainly, I think this was like a noteworthy edition of SmackDown overall.
Very newsworthy edition of SmackDown. So yes, for once, you've if you're following the product at large, you've got to at least go back and watch the main event, I think, which is well worth it too. I think it was a very good main event. And the fact that it was commercial free, if you're only going to watch that, there's 40 minutes of a well-worked match that's going to lead to something more. I also enjoyed the US title match, and I enjoyed, as brief as it was, the Jordan Grace sort of main roster debut. I just thought it was a very neat little kind of introduction to someone who's very strong and setting up something with her with Jade. There was a lot of filler, a lot of long, and we're going to get used to this, John, a lot of the long entrances and, all the rest of it. I was happy that it was in Europe and I didn't tune in at 7 p.m. local time to watch this. I watched it after it had already finished so that I could press the skip button a few times. That helps.
Yeah, I don't have any disagreements with that. I would say I don't think Trick and Ray Phoenix necessarily needs to be seen, but I would recommend Trick's promo segment with Randy Orton. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I thought he really shined and felt like an equal to Randy. And, just coming out of this show, like, Trick and Jordan Grace felt like real players on this show, and as opposed to just, random people being added to the roster. Like, they went out of their way to make them feel important on this episode. And I think that's imperative when you're introducing these new characters, and so many of them all at once as well. So that was a win on the show as well. Well, there you go, everybody. We are going to be wrapping up before can you imagine the USA Network, that being your lone way of taking in this show, and they're only starting the main event right now.
I don't want to imagine that, John.
It's kind of wild that Netflix, you just get this like so many hours in advance, but that's the breaks, folks. So we are going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube stream, but we will be back. As always, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown reviews. Consider becoming a member over at postwrestlingcafe.com, where we are bringing you all the best that we can offer, from our live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumble matches from 1990 and 95, the best and worst of show this Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern time for all subscribers, and so much more coming your way. And you get the dulcet tones of Neil Flanagan on the weekend news updates, book club as well, if you're a double-double or espresso member, and even more of his insight, such as he provided us for the news segment that preceded our show review as well. So goodbye to YouTube. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.